ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. I don't want to tell you the meaning of life or just say that this is what life means and want you to accept it. And hence I don't want to bring some ayat and hadith and force it down everyone's throat and say that, well, this is life, so everyone is compelled to just, okay, accept it. I think a better way of teaching and educating is to make the subject understood in the mind of the listener. Whenever you want to teach something, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Whenever you want to teach something and educate, the best way of educating is to bring the student, make him understand and comprehend the subject that you are speaking of, meaning bring him to the subject, not to bring the subject to him. Bringing the subject to him has no effect. It's when you bring the student to the subject that has an effect. Even when, for example, when you have children and want to train them, the idea is not just to tell them what's right and wrong. By telling them, it doesn't mean that they've understood it. It doesn't mean that they are going to put it in their lives and practice it. All it means is that they know. There are many things we know that we don't practice. So the idea is that the knowledge has come to us, we haven't reached the knowledge. And the idea of an educator is to make sure that the students reach the knowledge, not that the knowledge reaches them. That's the job of a preacher. A preacher is someone, you know, who just tells others and says, well, you know, I told them. And by telling them, you expect them to do it. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. It's a little bit more than that. And that's why education in the true sense is to bring the student to the knowledge, not the knowledge to the student. So, for example, if I bring an ayat or a hadith and say, well, this is what the imam said. You're like, okay, if this is what the imam said, there's no argument, there's nothing, okay, you know, whatever. You know, it happens. This is how you deal with it. Yeah, okay, I have no choice then, right? That's it. It's over. Right, the idea of a teacher is not to say that, okay, this is the hadith, you know, that I have shown them, I have explained to them, I have told them this hadith. The idea of a teacher is not to give the hadith to the student, but rather to bring the student to the hadith. Right? To the comprehension of that hadith, so that it's understood really well. You know, and when he understands it, then you know what? The idea is what the imams wanted others to know. It's the ideas that are in the hadith, the principles that are in the hadith that make us, you know, truly successful in our life. Now, if we have the hadith but not the principle, it's not helping us. So the idea in ayat or hadith is to get the knowledge of that. And if a person understood the knowledge without knowing that this is hadith, he is successful anyway. Right? He is successful anyway because that's what the imams wanted. And this is why it's very important when I'm explaining about life and I'm trying to explain this. It's not because of the fact that, you know, it's not mentioned in the ayat and hadith. No, the ayat and hadith are there. But if I mention ayat and hadith, then obviously, you know, then it's a one-way road. There's no room for us to grow, no room for us to reach that understanding of hadith. And that's why we want to reach that understanding of hadith, alaykum salam, in the way that we believe in it. That, yes, I believe in it. I truly understand it and I truly comprehend what life is, and that's what I want. So, this is the first thing I think I wanted to make clear before I go on. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And so in the last 3-4 days, we've been heading into this subject of life, and I think I want to make it simpler now. We've been off and we are, trying to understand it from different perspective. But what I want to do is that make, a example, a role model, you can say. Or what you can say is that what I want to do today is I want to bring from this whole subject, from a concept to a physical being, so that it's understood by us in a more simpler way, what life is. In order to make a physical presence of something that's abstract and conceptual, I would say that, if you want to define life, if you want to see what life is, then my friends, life has three dimensions. Life has three dimensions. It's a three-dimensional thing. And when all these three dimensions are understood, then a person understands life. He understands life. The first dimension is the length of life. Second dimension is the height of life. And the third dimension is the width of life. There's a length, a height, and a width. I explained the length yesterday. The length of life, when you see that, okay, how long is life? Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. How long is life? This is the length of life. How long is it? Well, the length of life is eternity. It is eternal. It is forever. This is the length of life. And when you look at this length of life, then obviously it's divided into these two phases. The one life here in this dunya and the life in the akhirat. And these two are phases of the same life. And obviously when you look at the life here as compared to the life there, you see this, it's very short, and that is very long. And hence, when we look at the length of life being eternal, then truly the life in this world really is irrelevant. It has no meaning. Right? It's like, for example, a day out of your childhood as compared to the rest of your life is meaningless. Right? And this is why when we look at the length of life and those who focus on the length of life, to them the world, this world and what's in it becomes meaningless. They say, what is the worth of this life? And that is forever. This life has no meaning here, right? So this is the first thing, my friends, the length of life. How long you're going to live? Eternal. This is the first thing to understand about life. If we don't understand that it's eternal, then truly we cannot take advantage of this. And I'm repeating myself, on this point, for a reason. Because it's something that is, known by us, but truly we are not convinced by it in our own life. Otherwise, if we were convinced by it, our lifestyle would be different. We would be different. We would be a different person. And since we are not, I know that we haven't been convinced by this. And I'm speaking about myself. And the idea is, this life that is forever, how many of us are really convinced by it? Because if we were, then every step we take would be like that. Let me give a hadith over here, interject with the hadith so we can understand this better. Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam had said, he had said that live for the akhirat as if you're going to die tomorrow, and live for the dunya as if you're going to live forever. Two sentences. He said what? That you live for the akhirat. When it comes to things about akhirat, anything that has to do with akhirat, any issue that has to do with akhirat, whether it's ibadat, whether it's dua, whether it's obligations, whether it's responsibilities, anything that has to do with akhirat, your attitude towards it, your behavior towards it should be as if you're going to die tomorrow. Meaning, if you're going to die tomorrow, how urgent everything would become. How urgent everything would become. Meaning, take the issues of akhirat urgently, with an urgency. Right? You know, if you're going to die tomorrow, what would be the most important thing? He said, these are the things. Do them like that. And when it comes to the issues of dunya, treat them as if you're going to live here forever. If you're going to live here forever, how would you treat something when you have all the time in the world? Right? If you have all the time in the world, how would you deal with it? You deal with it, okay, inshallah, farda, tomorrow. You know? And maybe this is the reason, you know, when you go into Muslim offices, this and that, you know, if you have muttaqi people there, they'll say, farda, we have enough time for these things. Right? And the idea, you know, the idea of dunya is given by Imam Baqir al-Islam, that he said that, you know, the urgency is not there. You know, treat it as if it's going to be there. It doesn't matter. If you, even if you accomplish it or not, it doesn't matter. Let's say, for example, I have a dream of making a home here, right, in dunya. So, according to the hadith of Imam Baqir, now I'm like, okay, you know what? This can wait. This can wait. This can wait. It's not urgent. You see? And you're saying, inshallah, it'll happen. Inshallah, it'll happen. When it happens. But if you get a chance of making a home in the akhirat, Imam said, do it right now. Do it right away. So I have a choice now. I have $30,000 I can give as a down payment for my home here, or I can give it to buy a home there in the akhirat. Now, which one would I choose? Would I give that money? You know, what's more urgent in my life? Is it to make my own home, or is it to give in Allah's way to Lady Fatima Center and say that, you know what, I want to make a home there? What is more urgent? You see, if we truly are convinced about life, you know what decision we would make. But it's because we are not convinced about life, that's why we make the decision, inshallah, the masjid other people can give. Who's going to give to me? Right? And this is how it happens. And we make decisions based on that. These are decisions that we make in real life. Now, Imam is saying that no, when it comes to things of akhirat, have urgency in it, give it right away. But when it comes to things that deal with dunya, the urgency is not there. Treat it as if you have enough time here. Even if you don't accomplish it, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter in your life. It's irrelevant. Let me give an example so, you know, inshallah, it becomes more clear. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala. My friends, you know, just to explain this, you know, when a person is born, when he's born and he's a child, an infant child, and he goes into a toddler age, then a youngster, you know, and then he becomes an adult, right? He becomes an adult later. But at first, he's childhood. Now, in this childhood that he has, right, what are the things that parents emphasize for their children? What are the things that they emphasize for their children? Do they emphasize the things that are important in that age, or do they emphasize things that will affect them the rest of their lives? A lot of times we see that we are very cruel parents when you look at it. It's very cruel how we parent children. And you tell me if it's right or wrong. If a child, for example, is asking for candy, and he's asking for candy all the time and soda and all these things, what would you do? Would you just say, all right, have as much as you want, drink as much as you want? Or would you say, no, you can't have that much, only one? Now he's crying for it. Why don't you listen? Have some mercy on him, compassion. Give him to him. Let him eat all the candies. Why don't you do that? No, but if he do, he's going to get sick. Right? He's going to get sick. He's going to hurt himself. He's going to get something wrong with him. Okay. Now, this child of mine doesn't want to go to school. He says, I'm bored there. And he's crying not to go there. And we are forcing him. No, you have to go. What kind of cruelty is this? We shouldn't be that cruel with our children. Let them stay at home, enjoy their life. What will happen then? Right? You'll say that, well, if he doesn't go to school, if he doesn't go to this hardship now, he'll be in trouble the rest of his life. Right? He'll be in trouble the rest of his life. What Allah did is that he gave us a childhood. He could have made all of us an adult. Right at the bat, he could have made all of us an adult. One of the reasons that Allah forgave Adam was because Adam never had a childhood. He never had a childhood. He never had a childhood that he had to go through and learn and make mistakes. He was created as an adult, he was created. And so he didn't have a childhood. He had no experience. Children go through the experience, and by the time they're adult, then everyone says, you're an adult now. Now you should know better. The reason you say that, because you have experience of making mistakes. You have experience of seeing these things at that time frame. You have these things when you become an adult. This is your real life now. This is where you're responsible. This is where your actions really count. Your prayers when you were a kid were never counted that much for you. Now they're being counted for yourself. Right? If a child prays, then the reward of the prayer goes to the parents. Right? But the thing is that when he becomes an adult, that's when he starts earning the reward. That's when he starts earning the reward for himself. So my friends, understand this. In light of this, when you look at this, Allah, he gave us this dunya in order that we make our real life, which is our adult life, which is our forever life, better. This is the reason dunya has been given to us. It's like our childhood here. It's like our childhood. And this is one of the reasons why Allah calls it. This dunya is only sports and entertainment. Don't take it seriously. This is nothing. Yeah, that's everything there. Lahayal hayawan. That one. You see? Now understand the reasons why. And what kind of attitude we should have with each thing in each issue of our life, whether it deals with this dunya or akhirat, in this way. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So the first aspect of life is the length of life. First dimension is the length of life, and length of life is forever, my friends. This is number one. Now, the second dimension of life is the height of life. By the height of life, what I mean is how high we want to reach, how great we want to be, what position we want to attain. This is what I mean by the height of life. My friends, people go to school, they go to work, they go educate themselves to do what? Right. One, obviously, the fear of hunger. They don't want to go hungry. They don't want to be on the hands of other people, or dependent on other people. But on the other hand, when you are studying, when you go and get bachelor's, you're not happy with that. You want master's. When you want master's, you want to get an MBA. You want to go higher than that. When you go into work, you want a promotion. You want to have more responsibility. You want to have a better post. There's aspiration in us. As a human being, we have aspirations to become better. than what we are, to become stronger than what we are. And having these aspirations is not a worldly thing. It is not wrong to have these aspirations, that I want to be successful, that I want to be the best that I can be. Because Allah has made us to reach perfection, having the aspirations to want perfection. Insan, as we are looking for kamal in everything that we do. In everything that we do. For example, you know, when you want to just take out a small menial thing as taking out the garbage, right? Someone who's aqil, someone who's intelligent, right, will do the, you know, best that he can, and he will take out the garbage in the best way that he can. And that's why he makes arrangements. Okay, if the garbage is here, put it in this, put the recycle here, put this here, put that here. And so you know what? Even that, he wants to make the best that he could. Because it is just the perfectionism that's inside of us that we are doing this with. We want to be perfect. We want to reach that height. It's inside of us. Allah wanted it for us. And Islam doesn't stop it. Unfortunately, what happens, that people who become religious, they think that this is a worldly thing, and hence they don't go after it. Right? I see, for example, youngsters who become Muslim. It happens to them also. And I get scared of them, you know, a lot of times. You know, it happens to them. What happens is that a youngster becomes a, you know, like, religious person, muttaqi, this and that. And now, he used to be a great kid, cool, he used to be handsome and everything. And as soon as he becomes religious, right, he becomes a nerd. And you're like, why do you become a nerd for? You see his clothing is shabby, his hair is shabby, the way he looks is shabby, everyone looks at him. And you know what happens with such people? Other people who are not religious point out to these people and say, you see, this is the reason you can become religious, you will end up like him. You end up like him. And this is exactly what happens. The problem that happens with kids who don't understand religion, when they become religious, they end up becoming nerds and they become a distraction for many others who might want to become good Muslims. That's why every time I see them, I tell them, listen, man, you go out and buy some clothes for yourself. Get a hairstyle for yourself. I don't want to see you like this, right? Because you are giving me a hard time doing my job. Right, you're becoming an obstacle for what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to attract these kids inside, and you're here stopping them from coming in. I can't have that happen. I mean, this is the idea behind it. People don't understand it. That, listen, religion doesn't stop you from growth. Religion doesn't stop you from aspirations. In fact, Islam, when you enter it, when you understand it, it increases your passion and your aspiration for greatness and excellence. Islam wants you to be excellent things. That's what Allah wanted from us. A Muslim is someone who excels in his field. He excels at being the best. A mu'min is someone who you would see is that if he's in any class, he would be the best in class. You'd be the best in class. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, I'm saying it. I'm saying it because, you know, we have hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. We have a hadith from him in which he was asked by someone that, listen, we go on travels, this and that. Because over there in those days, they didn't have yellow pages or, you know, internet where you can look up names, you know, this and that. Where's the Shia masjid? You know, let me go there. Meet the Shias in the area. Right? So they asked the Imam, how would we know if there's a Shia in a city? How would we know if there's a Shia somewhere? Right? What's the best way to find out? I mean, obviously, in those days, there were no Shia masjids or Shia centers there. He said, how can we recognize a mu'min? So Imam, he gave a secret. He gave a advice. Right? And watch this. This formula that the Imam gave. He said, go in any city. When you go in any city, find out who is the most muttaqi person, the most pious, the best person that everyone regards as the best in the city. Go and see them. And see if he is a Shia. If he is not a Shia, it means there are no Shias in that city. There are no Shias in that city. Because if a Shia is there, he would be the best in that city. He would be the best person in that city. People will regard him. He's the best person that we have. They'll regard him as that. He has the best qualities. You see, this is how you recognize. Why? The idea of a Shia is to excel. Imams have told us to excel in things, to make ourselves better and stronger at things. Challenge ourselves to become better in whatever field you are. Really doesn't matter what field you are. You could be, for example, a professor, or you could work at McDonald's flipping burgers. I'm not saying work at McDonald's, but I'm just giving an example. You can flip burgers. You should be the best burger flipper there is. Right? Why? Because you challenge yourself. This is what Islam said. Challenge yourself to be the best. Don't be the second best in anything. Of course, in goodness, in virtues, in what is right. And this is the reason why we excel. So having the aspiration and the passion to excel in things is not un-Islamic. In fact, it is very Islamic. It is what the Imams wanted from us, to excel in things. So now this idea of excellence and aspiring for things and to be the best and to reach the highest position that we can reach, this is in our life also. Life has a height. How high do you want to be? What height do you want to reach in life? This is decided. This is decided by yourself. Now the height you want to reach is obviously not here. The ceiling of dunya is very low for anyone to make dunya its goal. Really, you should not make dunya its goal. Success is not about this dunya. Again, you know, what is this success when we talk about, you know, people, and we know that, you know, they think that, you know, having money and wealth is the reason of success, that, oh, he's a successful person, he has money, look what he did in his life, he made business for himself, he did this for himself, this is success. Whatever he has gained, if it's only this dunya, then he hasn't reached anything. And Muslims always complain, and if you look at that, Muslims always complain that, hey, listen, why is it that, for example, they, meaning the non-Muslims, get all the wealth, right? If Allah is giving the wealth, then why is it that Allah is giving all the wealth to the non-Muslims? Why not us? My friends, as a reality and a principle, right, if you are a mu'min, it's next to impossible for you to become the richest person in the world. You can't, right? You can't do that. And there's reason behind it, right? But I'll just say one thing, right? If we have a complaint as Muslims, that why is Allah giving to them? Allah will always give more to them, to the non-Muslims, than Muslims, than mu'min, especially mu'min. He will always give more to them. And this is a complaint that the Muslims have, and they had before. This is a complaint that they had before the Prophet. They asked the Prophet that, Ya Rasulullah, we are the one who make jihad for Islam. We are the one who sacrifice for Allah. Then why is it that Allah is giving everything to them? The richest people, you know, Abu Sufyan, Abu Lahab, and all these people are rich people. And here we are poor, and we are striving for the deen. We do all the hard work. Why is it that they get all the rewards and the ajr and all these things? You know, the idea is okay. You know, Rasulullah answered back to them. He told them that, listen, and if you can understand this principle that Rasulullah said, I think this will be enough for us today, you know. He said, listen, if Allah had regarded this dunya of any value, if this dunya and anything in this dunya had any value, then the first people he would give it to would be the Anbiya. They are the beloved ones. He would give it to them. If there was any value in anything in this dunya, he would give it to them first. Why is he not giving it? Because this is garbage. This is trash. You don't give trash to people you love. If I want to buy, let's say, a simple thing as clothes for my children, I make sure that I go and buy new clothes. Right? Now, would we take secondhand clothes that are used by some people, trash, and say, okay, just wash it and give it to them. You won't know the difference. Would we do that to our own children? Of course we won't. My friends, why would Allah do it to His own believers, the people who He loves? Why would He do that to them? Giving them dunya is just like that. He says, no, just take enough of it, what you need, what you have, and that's good. Go on with life. Right? Yes, reach for excellence. Reach to be the best. Having wealth is not the problem. Right? And you can be rich. But you see, if you look by experience, it's always the non-Muslims who are richer. In history, always, until now. I mean, you know, just go and see the Fortune 500 list. See how many mu'mineen are there. Right? And then you can find out. Okay? Through experience, you can find out. It's not. The idea is that it's not, having wealth is not the problem. But Allah giving it to us, no, Allah will say, listen, if I want to give you something, I'll give you something more valuable. So here, inshallah, just the idea of success, I want to keep in mind. We have it. It's an aspiration that we have. Keep your mind still here. We'll, inshallah, go forward from tomorrow, right? From this point onwards. So the first thing is the idea of first dimension of life is length. It is forever. Second dimension we are studying right now, it is the height of life, and it begins with our aspiration for success and greatness and excellence. And from here, inshallah, we will see where that applies to our own life. Wa akhir da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. All right, I guess we have 4 more minutes. Is that right? 4 minutes. Yes, go ahead.
Just in regards to that thing you were saying about Allah not giving dunya to the believers, how would we explain the kingdom given to Prophet Sulaiman?
Yes. Here's the thing, right? When Sulaiman asked for it, see how he asked for it. Asa that Allah, give me a hukumat that no one else will ever have. So the hukumat, as in the case of all the prophets, for example, all the other prophets had their own miracles. The hukumat was the miracle of Allah to Sulaiman to establish his prophethood. You know, like other people, you know, used to raise the dead or, you know, open the river and, you know, do all these things. These were the specific mu'jizah and miracles that were given to prophets. Sulaiman specifically asked for this mu'jizah. And obviously that sort of a hukumat and him having authority on the jinn and on the winds has never been given to anyone. Right? And that's what he said, you know, that give me a hukumat that would be a sign from you that no one else will have after me. Right? So this is the reason it was given. Right? You know, so, and we have hadith also, because of the fact that he asked for hukumat and his life were easier than others in comparison, right? His life as a Nabi and as a prophet was easier than others because of the fact that he had hukumat. He wasn't under the yoke of oppression. He wasn't under any sort of pressure from people or others. Because of this reason, in the hadith it is said that amongst the Anbiya, he is the lowest ranking. He is the lowest ranking prophet amongst the Anbiya. Any other questions? Well, it's based on that hadith because they said he's the lowest ranking, and that's why they say he's the last one who will go there because of that reason. Because of the same reason. Because he didn't go through the hardships and the pain that the other prophets went through for the message. For delivering Allah's message. And that's why whenever Allah gives the examples of the prophet, he always gives examples of their jihad, of their hardships and the sacrifices they made. He never, it's hardly you can see like a place he gives examples of them, like having like a great time, with the message, this and that. Because the idea of the message is that you are going to get opposition. There's no way other than that. But here, you see, the only one who didn't was Suleiman because Allah gave him authority. Right? He gave him that hukumat. That's it, right? All right. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.